A cotton t-shirt hangs in your closet, price tag still attached. You bought it on sale 3 months ago, but never wore it. Next week, you'll probably toss it in a donation bin, feeling virtuous about helping someone in need. But what if that simple act connects you to a Mozambican street vendor named Mario, a child laborer in an Indian cotton field, and a complex global system that perpetuates the very poverty it claims to solve? Every year, wealthy nations export nearly 4 million tons of used clothing to the developing world, a massive reverse flow that challenges everything we think we know about charity, sustainability, and global inequality. Your discarded jeans don't simply disappear into the charitable ether. They embark on a remarkable journey through sorting facilities in Eastern Europe, shipping containers crossing oceans, and bustling African markets where vendors like Mario pay hundreds of dollars for sealed bales of clothing, hoping the lottery will yield sellable items. This isn't a footnote to globalization. It's a central feature of how modern capitalism connects the world's richest and poorest citizens through the most intimate items we own. When Levi Strauss and Jacob Davis created riveted denim pants in the 1870s, they designed workwear for California miners. A century later, Marlon Brando and James Dean transformed jeans into rebellion's uniform. During the Cold War, Soviet youth risked punishment for American jeans, symbols of forbidden Western freedom. Today, that subversive edge has vanished. Jeans are universal, signaling conformity rather than rebellion. Yet this ubiquity masks profound inequalities. Your $100 designer jeans likely began as cotton in India, were spun in Turkey, cut in Bangladesh, washed in Vietnam, designed in San Francisco, and sold in London. At each stage, profits flow upward to those controlling brands and distribution, while manufacturers and workers compete for razor-thin margins. The most profitable activities, design, branding, marketing, concentrate in wealthy nations protected by intellectual property rights. Meanwhile, actual production happens where workers earn less than a dollar per hour. That soft cotton t-shirt carries a darker history. Cotton occupies just 2.4% of global farmland, but consumes 24% of insecticides and 11% of pesticides. It requires 11,000 liters of water per kilogram, contributing to the Aral Sea's near disappearance, once the world's fourth largest lake, now reduced to 10% of its original size. The human cost matches the environmental devastation. In American cotton fields, enslaved people picked 200 pounds daily under threat of violence. Today, an estimated 110,000 children work in India's cottonseed production. Studies show poisoning symptoms in over 83% of pesticide interactions among Indian cotton workers: headaches, dizziness, respiratory problems, neurological damage. Colonial Mozambique created perhaps history's most exploitative cotton regime. Beginning in 1930, Portuguese authorities forced every adult man and his family to cultivate at least 2.5 acres of cotton, selling it below market price to monopoly companies. By the mid-1950s, up to 1 million people worked in cotton for about $11 annually. Police enforced cultivation through violence. One farmer testified, "Cotton is the mother of poverty." Meanwhile, Portuguese textile factories thrived on cheap colonial cotton, helping transform Portugal into a high-income country. Manufacturing jeans involves extreme labor subdivision. Pattern drawers map designs, cutters slice fabric, seamers join pieces, pocket riveters secure stress points, each task completed in under a minute. After basic stitching, jeans undergo extensive finishing. Industrial laundering creates softness, chemical bleaching adds contrast, mechanical grinding produces wear patterns, manual scraping adds distress marks. These treatments create the lived-in aesthetics consumers demand. Production has abandoned Europe and America. Italian luxury brands like Armani and Gucci shifted manufacturing to Asia while maintaining design in Milan and Florence. American brands like Levi's de-verticalized, dissolving domestic manufacturing while retaining design and marketing in San Francisco. Manufacturing now occurs in Mexico, Bangladesh, Vietnam, and Cambodia, exploiting dramatic labor price variations from $25 per hour in the US to less than $1 in South Asia. China's rise as the world's manufacturing center transformed global economics through unprecedented 10% annual growth over three decades and a massive labor force exceeding 800 million workers. Three factors catalyzed China's garment boom: state sector dominance, establishing industry foundations, diaspora Chinese communities linking overseas investment to mainland labor, and perfect timing, as China's export surge filled the gap left by South Korea and Taiwan's shift to higher value industries. When the Seattle Seahawks upset the Denver Broncos in Super Bowl XL48, thousands of pre-printed Broncos Champions shirts became obsolete. The NFL donated them to World Vision for overseas distribution, a feel-good story masking a massive commercial trade in unwanted clothing. The global used clothing trade is now a $4.3 billion industry, with 3.9 million tons exported annually. The UK alone ships 350,000 tons worth $612 million, primarily to Poland, Ghana, Pakistan, Ukraine, and Benin. Organizations like Oxfam and Goodwill operate professional business models most donors don't understand. Many charities partner with commercial operators who pay royalties to collect under their name. Some for-profit schemes make only token charitable donations while earning up to $2,000 per ton. Research shows most donors are unaware their donations don't go directly to charity shops. In 2008, UK charities collected 523,000 tons of clothing, roughly 20 items per person. Only 10 to 30% sells domestically in charity shops. The rest is sorted, graded, and exported. The sector battles widespread theft, with drivers threatened and bins targeted when prices spike, forcing organizations to implement GPS tracking and locked containers. Sub-Saharan Africa became a major secondhand clothing marketplace in the 1980s as IMF structural adjustment programs weakened domestic textile industries. As incomes declined, cheap used clothing provided relief while outcompeting local production. In Uganda, used clothing accounts for 81% of purchases. In Ghana and Kenya, 60-70%. Container ships transport thousands of tons as return cargo to African ports. The clothes acquire local names: Salaula in Zambia, selecting from a pile; Kafa Olaya in Nigeria, clothes of dead whites; Mitumba in Kenya and Tanzania, bundles, reflecting complex cultural attitudes. Vendors, 65% women, enter through family loans, moneylender credit at 20 to 50% interest, or redundancy payments from lost jobs. Earnings are highly variable. Purchasing sealed bales creates a lottery. Vendors can lose money when overheads exceed sales. A single bale costs $100 to $170, yielding average daily income of just $5.40. For impoverished communities, practical necessity overrides ethical concerns. Used clothing offers both lower cost and superior quality compared to affordable new garments, making the trade an economic lifeline and symbol of global inequality. Tom's shoes epitomize responsible capitalism with their buy one, give one model. Founded in 2006, after Blake Mieske witnessed shoeless Argentine children, the brand has distributed over 10 million pairs across 60 countries while building community through website engagement, annual awareness events, and giving trips for customers. Yet, criticism mounts from development experts. Free shoes may not address recipients' most urgent needs, clean water, healthcare, or sustainable income, and can disrupt local markets, harming manufacturers. The markup reveals the model's contradictions: 48 to 140 retail versus $5 manufacturing cost. Most Westerners consume enthusiastically while avoiding radical politics, but social media and documentaries expose global inequalities, creating dissonance. Ethical consumption emerges as political engagement substitute. Progressives buy fair trade cotton, charity shop dresses, and organic wool as solidarity demonstrations. Yet fair trade products don't challenge capitalist relations fundamentally. coffee farmers might receive $1.40 per pound instead of $1, but remain market vulnerable. Premium pricing excludes poorer consumers, creating a moral hierarchy where virtue signals wealth rather than transforming systems. Your clothing choices cannot solve global poverty. London Fashion Week transforms Somerset House into a spectacle where trends disseminate worldwide, inspiring mass production. As Coco Chanel observed, fashion is in the sky, in the street, the way we live, what is happening? Consumers have less autonomy than imagined. Demand is stimulated through image making by designers, retailers, and media, creating endless consumption cycles. Fashion billionaires like Amancio Ortega, $57 billion, and Stephen Persson, $28 billion, amass fortunes exceeding entire countries' GDPs, while garment workers earn dollars daily. Only 5 to 10% of garment workers belong to independent unions. The secondhand clothing trade exists because capitalism fails to meet basic needs for vast portions of society. The truly responsible choice would be shopping less frequently, wearing clothes until worn out, repairing them, or replacing with locally produced goods. However, this approach will likely attract only a small segment of consumers. When you drop clothes in a donation bin, recognize you're participating in a global system connecting extreme wealth with desperate poverty, turning charity into commerce. Real change requires more than better shopping choices. It demands confronting the economic structures that make a Mozambican vendor's livelihood depend on your discarded jeans.